You're listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. And now your hosts, Josh Furlong and Josh Newman.
Welcome back to another edition of the Utah Checkdown Podcast. I am Josh Furlong, joined as always with my co-host, Josh Newman. What's up, Josh?
How we doing, Josh?
Doing well. We're doing this a little bit at a different time. We're doing this at nighttime. That's not ever a bad thing. I think now that we're in full season, it gets a little bit crazy with our schedules, and so sometimes it doesn't always fit. So for those of you that are listening to this, you may be listening to this in the morning, you may be listening to this at another time, but we're always here for you, so don't worry about that. No, but we got another podcast after Utah's second game of the season. Utah is now 2-0 on the season and is one of only two teams in the country with two wins over Power 5 teams. The other team being Colorado, which nobody's talking about Colorado, so
no.
We're good.
Is that
there.
A thing?
No. They're only going to win these two games, right?
Right.
Yeah.
For sure. 2-10 coming in.
But as we start this podcast, it's funny because if you and I, you know, we talked about all these things going into the season and fall camp, and if we would have said that Cam Rising doesn't play, you know, the first, let's say, 2, 3, 4, 5, I don't know how many games it's going to take, and Utah's 2-0 against Florida and Baylor, Utah fans would have been ecstatic, right? Like, I think we both assume that that's the case. And it's not that Utah fans aren't ecstatic right now. I think there's just a much more muted excitement based on how those games have been. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. Listen, Kyle Whittingham will tell you that there's always something to nitpick about, always something to improve. And I think that sort of thought process goes on with fans too. Like, even though you're 2-0, you still try, you know, you still tend to veer towards some of the negatives. I don't know what that is in like the fan psyche, but that just is what it is. And, you know, what do you want to complain about? Well, you know, the offense for 7.5 quarters wasn't high flying, wasn't really elite, right? Like, you know, Bryson Barnes, I thought, did what he had to do in the opener against Florida with Nate Johnson making some cameos. And then in the Baylor game, Bryson Barnes was bad.
Yeah.
Holding on to the ball too long, sailed a few balls. There wasn't really a whole lot of offense to speak of. They didn't get into the end zone for the first 3+ quarters. And, you know, again, it was kind of the same thing, you know, in Waco, Bryson Barnes starting, but Nate Johnson coming in for, you know, for plays or for series. And then with about 10 or 11 minutes to go, you know, again, Bryson Barnes was ineffective. So they gave the reins to Nate Johnson. Nate Johnson, 15 play, 88-yard drive to tie the game. And he looked, you know, in control, like more, you know, he hasn't played a ton yet. Now remember, right, he only played in 4 games last year. We're only 2 games into this season. He hasn't played a ton of football, but for the small sample size that Nate Johnson has, I thought that 15 play drive at Baylor was the smoothest and most comfortable and most confident he looked, you know, in terms of running the offense, in terms of throwing the ball, in terms of just leading his team. You know, they go, you know, down the field, tie the game. Cole Bishop with the interception. They score again late. Just a really nice job by Nate Johnson late in the fourth quarter. And for that reason, you know, there's a multitude of reasons, but for those reasons on Saturday, he is now the unquestioned QB2. And Kyle Whittingham said so. He has, you know, jumped ahead of Bryson Barnes. And if Cam Rising cannot go on Saturday against Weber State, it's Nate Johnson's show. And I'd be curious to see, you know, a start from Nate Johnson and a full deal from Nate Johnson. Maybe, you know, if Johnson starts, if this Weber game gets out of hand, maybe he doesn't play for 4 quarters, but I'd like to see Johnson start a game, run an offense, get 2.5, 3 quarters and really get the full repertoire and really see what he has.
Well, after that first game against Florida, you know, the coaching staff and all the messaging was about, you know, Utah can utilize this 2-quarterback system because it's different than a 2-quarterback system, right? And I think both of us in our last podcast talked about it not being an ideal situation, But if anybody could manage this one, this seemed at least close to what it can work, right? Like, I don't think we ever thought the consistency was there. There was never a rhythm.
Right.
But at the same time, I think just the nature of where the Utah coaching staff had talked about these quarterbacks, it felt like this was the best option. Bryson probably was the more consistent. Nate could be the guy that could run. He can still throw, but it's something that, you know, it's much easier this way. Well, you saw in Baylor that just wasn't the case, right? Like, it just didn't work. Every time that Bryson got into the game, you know, he was rushed. He didn't look as good as he did against Florida. But then when he was in there, there was mixing it up, right? Like, you put Nate in there. Even Nate, for that matter, he didn't look all that good either, in the sense that he was just in there as a run guy. And a lot of that's by design, right? Like, Andy Ludwig is going to come in there and he's going to just, pound the rock, and he's going to try to do these things to kind of key that defense into the line. They take their shots. You know, it's all this, chess strategy. But the difference here is, once it really definitely wasn't working for Bryson, and it wasn't working at all, right? Like, I mean, like we mentioned, it was, holding on the ball too long, selling passes. You know, there were several pass plays where these wide receivers are open. Like, in years past, we've talked about wide receivers not getting open and demanding the ball. That wasn't the case. Bryson just wasn't making the plays. And so the difference there is, when Nate came in, you saw a completely different player in my eyes. Like, I think you saw that he commanded that respect, that confidence. He came in there and he looked like an actual quarterback and not just a guy filling in for a couple reps. And I think that does a lot for the confidence, the psyche, and just being able to say, look, Bryson's had his shot. Nobody else is going to take this from you. Go do it, right? I mean, at that point, Utah really had nothing to lose. They all said that they had no fear that they were going to lose that game. But the reality is, like, there was a real shot that game's a loss, right? Like, it's a terrible 13-6 loss, and you leave that thinking how dreadful this situation is. When is Cam going to come back? Nate steps up, backed up on the 12-yard line, marches the team downfield, scores the rushing touchdown, opens it up to this incredibly different game, and now Utah has a quarterback. And I know a lot of fans want to complain about this and say, Utah's always buried their quarterbacks, and you can look at all these guys, Cam Rising was buried, yada, yada, yada. And, like, sure, maybe there's some evaluation there, but at the same time, these guys are looking at practice. They're looking at, like, consistency. They're the ones that are seeing them on a day-to-day basis, and until somebody steps up and takes the reins, Kyle's not going to just give it to him, right? Sometimes also, when a guy gets under those bright lights, it changes the entire dynamic, and I think we're seeing that a little bit with Nate Johnson.
Yeah, Nate Johnson, you have to remember here, as you're watching these games and Nate Johnson play quarterback and trying to figure it out, you have to remember, he hasn't played a ton of football, and he hasn't played a ton of quarterback. If we back up to his time at Clovis High School in the Fresno area, I remember going to Clovis for a day before his senior year and talked to the coach and Nate and some people. You really have to consider what Nate's career has been. Okay, freshman year of high school, the varsity coach at Clovis likes to keep the freshmen together. He played on the freshman team. Fine. Sophomore year, he makes the varsity. They were very short at wide receiver. So this kid, takes one for the team and goes to play wide receiver. Didn't complain. That's what the team needed. He didn't play much quarterback at all as a sophomore. Junior year, COVID. There was no season. Senior year of high school was really his first, I am now the full-time starter, on the varsity, and he had a good year. He wasn't, super-duper lights out as a senior at Clovis, but he had a good year.
Well, in high school, it's so different. If you're a dominant athlete, you can do whatever. Exactly.
Yeah, no, forget it. And then, shows up at Utah last year, 2022. He's running the scout team. What happened? Tavion Thomas, they were dealing with that. They moved Jaquindon Jackson to running back. They promote Nate Johnson to QB3. So then, instead of getting reps every day as the scout team guy, you're buried on the depth chart getting third quarterback reps. So just, again, as you're watching Nate Johnson and you're thinking about it and you want to complain, and just consider what his career has been. He has not played a ton of football and he has not played a ton of quarterback, but his skills and his IQ and his mindset, these things are so high that he has, he has caught on quickly, and he is learning. And yeah, the fumble stuff, that's a concern. But look, Kyle Whittingham has said, a bunch of times. This is going back to last year. He said that, you know, Nate Johnson has a cannon for an arm. He can really sling it. He just has to get everything. You know, he has to like harness everything and he'll get there. And you saw some of that against Baylor at the end, you know, not just the way he played, but like the moxie. And like, you're like, I personally, like, I was not in Waco. I'm watching this game on my couch and the 15 play drive is unfolding and you are I'm watching Nate Johnson. I'm like, this kid looks like a leader. This kid mm-hmm. has the stuff. They are marching down the field, but he is converting on third down. He can run it. He can throw it a little bit. You know, he went 6 of 7 there down the stretch. Like, this kid has the stuff. And just, you know, one other interesting point about this kid, again, as you're watching him, Utah did not originally offer this kid as a quarterback. Okay. They offered him as an athlete and he was so adamant that no, I am a quarterback. This is during COVID, you know, during his junior year, they went out, they, you know, they like made film because there was no game film, you know, during his junior year, he went out and just threw. And that was his film for his junior year. And he felt with so much conviction that he was a quarterback that eventually Kyle McDonald, right, you know, the former ace recruiter at Utah, he believed Nate Johnson that he was a quarterback. And now he's a quarterback. And here we are.
Well, that's, you know, I think a lot of people don't really take into account, especially California athletes, what that COVID year or years did to a lot of these athletes. They didn't get a lot of opportunities. Yeah. That's why you had some guys coming to Utah or other places.
Almost none.
Exactly.
Almost no opportunities.
And so I think, you know, you lose a whole year of playing football in a competitive environment, that takes it out, right? And I think, you know, we're seeing those glimpses. And I don't want to make this comparison the same, because I don't think it's the same, but it Nate Johnson coming into the game was very reminiscent of Cam Rising coming in that San Diego State game. You and I were both there watching that. And the second Cam got in there was a completely different shift in the mindset, right? The players seemed to just buy in more. The offensive line suddenly started to protect. Everything was working. Yep. It wasn't that drastic in, you know, Baylor, yeah. But at the same time, there was a literal kind of mantle kind of pass to him that was just like, okay, Nate, you were the quarterback, here we go. And like I said, I don't want to like make this too hyperbolic or whatever that is, but you know, he got in there and he was crisp with his passes. You know, they were it's not like he was throwing these 40-yard bombs, but they were tight, they were straight, you know, everything was good. Yep. The mm-hmm. problem before that, Bryson was taking too long to throw, and then when he did throw, it was just a little bit lobbed. The DBs had plenty of time to be able to get there, break it up, those types of things. These things give a team confidence, right? Wide receivers want the ball, and if you're giving them confidence by being able to do it, they're going to run harder for you. The offensive line knows, that, hey, we'll protect a little bit longer for you if you do these things. That's not a knock on Bryson Barnes. I'm not trying to sit here and say this, and this isn't a, you know, we're not trying to knock him. We just had always talked about his ceiling just was never as high as what Nate Johnson's potential can be. We don't even know what Nate Johnson's potential can be, right? Like, Nate could very well be one of these great dual threat quarterbacks. We just haven't seen it, right? And I will say the thing that most impressed me about Nate Johnson was the fact that he didn't look to run on that drive, right? Like, he wasn't just instantly, okay, I went to my first read, it wasn't there, I'm not going to go through my progressions, I'm going to go just take off the sideline. He actually stayed in the pocket, he looked composed, he didn't look like a running quarterback, he looked like a pocket present quarterback that was able to manage the game and did exactly what he needed to. So I think, look, how long this will last and whatever that means, you know, if Cam is healthy for Saturday, yada, 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 we've talked about this. I still think Utah's now at a much better point than probably they were 2 weeks ago, just because they've given their quarterback with a ton of upside a lot of confidence.
Yeah, I mean, that's well said. And like, look, we can talk about this like much later, but the impact that Rising has had on the program is like so prolific and so profound that I think a lot of us at some point have veered towards, well, what is the future of the position after Rising? Like, is the next guy in the room? Is it Nate Johnson? Is it Bryson Barnes potentially next year still? Is it Mac Howard? Is it Brandon Rose? Again, like, you watch Nate Johnson
at the end. How dare you not put Isaac Wilson in there? I'm just so – I know you're upset about the Jets losing, man.
I don't want to talk about the Wilson family at all right now, okay? But, no, I think you have to start considering, is Nate Johnson the guy
sure.
in 2024 and moving forward? And again, this is not a topic for now. It's a topic for later. But what does the QB room look like in a post-Rising world? Like, we'll get through the season. We'll get to spring ball. is it Nate Johnson's deal? By then, presumably Brandon Rose is healthy. Are you looking at a three-way deal again in spring? Just some things to think about down the line. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, I think all this is good, right? And I think it can help Utah in the future. You know, it's going to be their first year of the Big 12, and that's going to be an interesting transition, and we've got plenty of time to talk about that. But one of the things I want to jump to is, you know, all last week, you and I had known about this. It's kind of hard to report some things on injuries because it's just not – it's kind of a taboo thing at Utah, right? And so – you had independently confirmed it. I'd independently confirmed it, but like there's other things that go into this. Mekhi Bernard goes out for a season ending injury. Kyle Whittingham confirms that after the game. It's a situation where you lose a running back with veteran experience. It's another body in that room. It's a deep room, mind you, but it's another body. And I think the biggest thing there, though, is that he did more for that room than probably many expect, right? Like, he was kind of the change of pace back that a lot of people used. But he was a veteran player that gave Jaquindon Jackson, who this is his first full year as a running back, Jalen Glover, who's yeah. Now a sophomore coming in, that means something to guys, right? He was a great pass protector. He did a lot of great things. And so Mekhi Bernard going out, it does impact. But from your eyes, I mean, what would you say is the most immediate impact for this Mekhi Bernard injury?
Well, I think when, how do I put this? All things being equal, I think he's or was their best, most versatile running back. And that's not to say negative things about Jaquindon Jackson, but he's a baby in terms of playing running back, right? Mekhi Bernard showed up in Utah when he was 17 years old and really green himself and redshirted in 2019, and COVID was weird. And he really had to show some patience and really had to wait his turn. And when he was healthy, which was not all the time, he did some really good things, not just as a runner, but he was by far the best pass catching option in terms of a running back. He was really good in pass pro. And I think he had the respect of that running back room. And I think he had the respect of his teammates. So you're not only losing a productive player, but I think you're losing, that veteran leadership. You know, he's been to war, so to speak, a lot. Like, he's played in huge games, and, that's tough to replicate in terms of leadership and just what the composition of your room looks like. But again, from a football standpoint, thought he looked pretty good during the Florida game, right? He was downhill and putting his head down and running over guys for more yards. I've been a little more bearish on Jaquindon Jackson and a little more bearish on the running back room and what it is on paper entering the season. Yes, Jaquindon Jackson was terrific against Baylor. The 44-yard run, just his general play, the way he went about business on Saturday. Again, I've been more bearish on Jackson. I've been more bearish on the running back room in general, thinking what it is and what it could be. And that is not being helped by losing a guy like Mekhi Bernard. Now, it's good that, that Jalen Glover stepped up in the fourth quarter against Baylor, played well, right? Think you've left that game feeling more optimistic about Jalen Glover and what he can be moving forward. My big question now is, without Bernard, is how fast can you get Chris Curry in there and ramped up and making an impact, right? I asked Kyle Whittingham that on Monday. Unbeknownst to me, Curry did play a snap against Baylor, which I was not aware of. So, okay, he is now healthy enough to be playing. Now the question, how much longer is it going to take to really get him in there? Because if you can get Curry going and you keep Jaquindon Jackson going and Jalen Glover is filling in there and doing some things, the loss of Bernard is less profound if those three guys get it going.
And I think the interesting thing that Kyle said to you was, Chris Curry now is kind of put on an increased timeline now to be able to get back, right? I wonder if they were just saying take it easy, what his progression was. Yeah. The fact that he could get on the field says a lot. they have faith that he's at least close. But yeah, I think now that Mekhi's out, that kind of pushes him into more of a spotlight to say, hey, look, we need you. You know, they've got Charlie Vincent and they trust him. He's a walk-on kid, but he's done a lot for them, and they actually love Charlie Vincent. They've also just got three phenomenal freshmen behind him that are, you know, potentially going to steal that. They're just not there yet. But I think, you know, I'm with you, right? Like, I think at this point in the season, two games into the season, I think we expected the running back room, at least on paper, to be a little bit better, a little bit more production, to be able to have a little bit more dominance there. And it's not even necessarily the offensive line. And look, I'm the last person to get into offensive line technique and where the holes should have been and who didn't pick up their guy or do different things. So, like, I understand that. But at the same time, I think, you know, the running backs need to find a way. And we talked to Quinton Ganther this week, and he said it's more than just being a physical runner. It's everything. It's the pass protection. It's catching the passes out of the backfield. It's doing everything that goes into being a running back. That's where he feels like they're not good enough, right? He sees that they're physical runners. He sees that they're attacking those holes really hard, but they just haven't really converted it, right? They're always kind of like a step away from breaking it loose. We finally saw Jaquindon with that 44-yard one. He actually had the 22-yard touchdown that was called back for a holding penalty, and you can argue if that was a holding penalty or not. I don't really care personally, but I think, you know, they're close. I think they're getting there, and I'm curious to see if now Mekhi's not there, if somebody has to step up. Is that Jaquindon? Is that Jalen? Is it Chris? Chris has more experience than the other guys. He's at a different school, but, you know, he was starting to come into his own. So I'm curious to see kind of how that takes shape and kind of what will happen. So, it, you know, don't sleep on the Mekhi Bernard injury. I think that's something that is a big loss. I think more than any year, Utah can probably recover from that, but they do have to have guys step up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Now, let me ask you this. You know, the Jalen Glover play at the end of the game where, you know, it appeared that Baylor was going to let him score, and he tiptoed around the goal line trying to waste time. He got pushed into the end zone. He called that a Madden play. You know, what did Quinton have to say about that this week?
Yeah, you know, Quinton's funny because he called it the smartest, dumbest decision that he could have made, right? and if, you know, I've gone back and actually watched that play several times because live, I thought for sure that he was down probably 3 yards, you know, past the line of scrimmage. They were going to set up for something, maybe try to kick a field goal, whatever it may be. And then all of a sudden, he's gone. So I've gone back and watched it, and the Baylor defenders, they had no intent on trying to tackle him. It was kind of like, we're going to do our best, but at the end of the day, we're going to let you get into the touchdown. And, you know, kudos to Jalen Glover. He actually did, you know, play the Madden game. If you ever played Madden, you want to wear out the clock against your opponent. It's great. He runs this, you know, the sideline, the parallel to the end zone, and finally they realize, no, we need him to score so that we have a chance. It's a situation where Kyle and Quinton, they weren't necessarily too happy with it. They like that he's thinking that, and I think that's what appeals to them about Jalen and his ability. You know, he's not just a physical runner. He's a very smart kid who understands situational stuff, right? Kyle calls it situational awareness and just being able to understand the situation. So, you know, it's an interesting play. They loved it. They hated it. It's all the same. But I think at the end of the day, you know, he did exactly what they needed to be able to get it. To me, you know, if I'm Utah, I would snap the ball a little later in the clock, right? Like, I think you could have taking that down a little bit later. So, you know, there's a lot that could go on there, but I think it says a lot of what Jalen can be, and I think it's a good situation for Utah to have. But moving on just a little bit to some other injuries. So we did see Junior Tafuna on the field. He didn't play a ton. It wasn't extensive work. At least I can't remember it being a lot of extensive work. You know, you're still missing Brant Keithy, Kareni Reed, Connor O'Toole. Kyle had said that he's probably about a week or two out. Brant Keithy this week, you know, he's kind of dodged us as the media, and I don't blame him necessarily, because what is he going to answer, right? Like, I'm still not ready to play. I'm still not ready. You know, it's hard for him to answer those questions because he still doesn't know. But on, what was it, Tuesday, he went on ESPN 700 with Bill Riley and talked about his injury for the first time and just kind of gave an update on it. And he ultimately said that he's just not there yet. Now, to you, is it time to be worried about Brant Keithy? you know, he said that he's not trying to hold out to, you know, preserve NFL stock or anything that way. He's literally trying to get back on the field. But are you worried that Brant Keithy won't actually see the field this year?
Not yet, but I do think that is something worth talking about. And I did kind of allude to that on social media earlier this week. Look, it's September 13th. Okay. You know, you're two games in. Pac-12 play has not started yet. So no, I don't think it's time to start worrying about Keithy. But look, if this drags on and we're still talking about this in October or later, you know, we're getting into mid-October, let's say in my mind, I've kind of set the deadline sort of at like Halloween. Like if Keithy is not back by Halloween, you have to start considering the possibility that he just doesn't play mm-hmm. for Utah at all this season, because on the back end of this season, you still want to have a professional career. You know, he's flirted with the NFL draft twice before. You know, I think at the end of the day, while he may very well like want to step on the field for Utah and wants to help win another Pac-12 championship and do all those things with his teammates, he also wants a professional career. So at the end of the day, I think getting healthy and getting ready potentially for the combine and for workouts and for interviews, that trumps getting on the field for Utah. So again, we're two games in here, but if we're sitting here in 6 weeks and the regular season is like three quarters over already, then it's time to start considering that you're not going to see Keithy. We're not there yet, but I do think at this point, especially after he talked to ESPN 700 and what he said, I do think that possibility is at least worth discussing for down the road.
And, you know, the thing is, he's close, right? And it's not that close is a very tough thing to quantify, right? Like, it's not easy to say, oh, he's a week away or 2 weeks. I mean, they're having a hard enough time with Cam Rising, and he's much closer, I think. But right. But Brant, he's putting in the work. We see it, you know, when we come in down, you know, to practice and everything. Mm-hmm. We don't actually get to see him work out, but we see that he's staying after. He's working on different drills or doing different things that way. He can physically move around, but it's a difference of going 11 on 11 and the fear of, you know, tweaking your knee again or having just something. You know, he talked about the injuries that his brother sustained that ultimately ended his career. You know, you don't right. want to rush yourself too back, right? Like, he wants to play, and like anybody that's talked to Brant Keithy understands he wants to be on that field as much as anybody. But at the same mm-hmm. time, you have to be able to manage that properly. I like to refer back to Britton Covey a few years ago when he tore his ACL in the Pac-12 championship game. Comes back, everybody thought he's ready. Britton thought he was ready. Little did we know that he actually had a setback in the offseason. He had to have another surgery to be able to repair it. It fixed it, but he wasn't fully ready yet, played four games, redshirted and all that. It doesn't always work, right? Like, Brant can even come back and he could come for a game or two and he just doesn't feel right. It this is a tough situation, and I understand Utah fans want to see Brant Keithy back on the field. You know, just offensively, he does stuff that changes the whole dynamic of this team, and I think the team has probably changed enough that they don't necessarily need him like they have in the past. Now, that's not to say that he's not needed, but I think they can get around that. You know, you got Mikey Matthews, you got Micah Pittman, you've got Thomas Yasmin or Landon King that are stepping up. There's guys that can fill those voids. But I think it's just so hard to be able to understand where Brant is at. He doesn't even understand where he's at. And so this is hard. You know, you gotta feel for him. You know, back in September when he tore his ACL, I think we all kind of penciled it in to say, okay, he'll be back. That's plenty of time. But the reality is injuries, you know, you can't predict, you know, and you hate to see it.
No. Yeah.
Just like your beloved Aaron Rodgers. It sucks to be able to, sorry, I keep putting that out.
Terrible.
Anybody watching this is just like, oh, he's
just heartbreaking. My God. So we understand what the situation is with, well, we sort of understand what the situation is with Keithy, maybe not so much. I think we have a bit of a clearer picture of Cam Rising. Mm-hmm. Okay, still full practice, no limitation, going through everything. He's essentially in the, you know, the ramp up process. Do we see him against Weber on Saturday?
See, this is where I'm leaning. I saw him. He warmed up for the Baylor game. I never thought he was going to go. We'd actually heard that he wasn't going to go, but he was out on the field warming up, going through the progressions like he was actually trying. And it appears that he's close. I don't know what it actually means and what it all is there. I've heard some rumblings that there's a very good chance that he does play this week, but that can be optimism. It can it can just be people hoping that he plays, right? I think a lot of people have also penciled in this game as like a good warm-up game for him. I still am leaning on the side where it's probably getting more to the 70-30 that he plays, but I also wouldn't be surprised if that 30 flipped real quickly to a 70, if that makes sense. Like, I know that's not really easy to say right there. I just think Cam is making the progressions, right? I think he is as close as you possibly can without actually physically being fully cleared by his physician in California to be able to play. He's going through everything. He's ready. It's just a matter of them finally saying it. And I think you'll see him this Saturday, but, you know, don't be surprised if he doesn't actually dress and continues to be in street clothes.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I am too, sitting here on Wednesday, just listening to Kyle Whittingham on Monday and talking to some people early this week. I mean, I think we're leaning towards him going, but you just don't know yet. And, you know, erring on the side of caution has been the name of the game, you know, with Rising throughout the rehab process and certainly throughout August. And of course, as we've gotten into September and some games, I think it would be good if he could get on the field Saturday and knock some of the rust off and, you know, and just be Rising and do what he does at quarterback. I don't think you want to be, you know, playing the Pac-12 opener as your return, you know, again, you know, coming in cold. You haven't played almost 10 months at that point. You don't want to be trying to knock the rust off against UCLA. You would rather be knocking some rust off against Weber. And that's not to say that Rising has to play for, you know, for four quarters, right? You would expect that Utah would have this game in hand, you know, by halftime or, you know, or midway through the third quarter. And yeah, you know, if he's going to start, he doesn't have to play four quarters. Let him play two and a half. You can split the fourth quarter between Johnson and Barnes. You can give the whole thing to Nate Johnson, but it would be good. Again, I think he's going to go. We don't know yet, but it would be good if you could get Rising out there this week instead of next week.
Yeah, if everything goes as planned, this is as good of a week as any to be able to get it. It's a good, I don't want to even call it a glorified scrimmage because Weber State is a good team, right? I think if I last saw, they're the seventh best team in the FCS, so you know, even without Jay Hill there, they've got the dudes to be able to compete. So this is going to be a competitive game. It's just it comes in a different environment. And before we maybe fully jump into full Weber State, not that we're going to dive in too much. I mean, let's be real. We're not going to do that. I'm curious in your eyes, you know, this is the last game of non-conference season before it gets into the conference slate. It gets so much harder, especially with eight teams ranked in the Pac-12. This is going to be a tough year. Is there any outstanding questions or concerns that you have going into this last game that you kind of want to see shored up that kind of are lingering?
I mean, the one lingering question I have, sort of a big thing, but like, you know, you'd like to see the offense clicking at a higher rate, at a better rate, but you can't really judge the offense as a whole until the offense is whole. Mm-hmm. And that means Rising. Whether or not we see Keithy, you know, you need to see Rising out there before you start really judging the offense. The defense is, you know, I'm probably a believer in this defense after they gave up 11 to Florida and 13 to Baylor. I don't care how good or bad Florida and Baylor turn out to be. You're averaging 12. You're giving up 12 points per game on defense, having played two Power Five teams. I don't care how good or bad they
without
are.
Without a majority of your starters, mind you.
Right. And that's the other point I was going to make. You can't even fully judge this defense until everybody's back. Like, yeah, you've got Junior Tafuna back, but it doesn't seem like he's full go yet. Get Samote Pepe in there, get Connor O'Toole in there, Kareni Reed when he's healthy. So yeah, the defense is off to a super optimistic start. You know, I asked Kyle Whittingham on Monday about this defense and, you know, have they performed even better than you may have thought? And how does that affect what he believes the ceiling is? And like, he didn't really flinch. I liked his answer. He said, you know, he's not surprised at all. He thought the unit would be really good. Yeah, the ceiling is really high, but again, you know, the ceiling is high without some very key members, which of course I think, you know, bodes well down the road. So no, I don't have any questions on defense. yeah, offense, there are questions going into the Weber game. But again, and I can't stress this enough, it's really unfair to judge the offense until you at least have the quarterback back there.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think my biggest question outside of maybe, you know, some tentative thoughts about the run game is I want to see what these wide receivers can do, right? Like, we've seen Mikey Matthews. He's done a phenomenal job in the times that he's gotten the ball, but we really haven't seen a lot of play to a lot of these receivers. Micah Pittman's tried. He had, you know, an easy, what looked like to be a touchdown pass in the Florida game, and he dropped the ball. Those happen, yep. So I'm not going to, you know, fault him for that. But, like, what I saw in that Baylor game is you saw a lot of guys getting open, but I'm curious to see if, you know, Nate can get that. If Cam's in the game, how dynamic can that be? You know, if Money Parks explodes like we've seen him and gets behind those DBs, I mean, Utah could be a very dangerous team, but we still don't know, like you mentioned. The one thing I will say on the defense that I am questioning, and I probably have this question now more than I did going into the season, is what is that secondary coverage going to be like, mostly on the corners, right? I think we're seeing guys that they're good. I mean, the Miles Battle, he played the play well, whether you agree with the PI or not. I think he played it well enough that's what you have to do as a defender, right? Both guys have free reign to that ball, and so, like, if you can make it look like you're going for that ball, generally the ref isn't going to call that. I think they're making great reads that way. I think they're doing fairly well in that area, but there are times where there is a lot of space that allows these wide receivers to be able to get the ball, probably more than we've seen in years past. Granted, look, in Florida, they were giving up those screen routes. They were giving up a bunch of different things that allowed those yards to happen. Baylor, I think there was a few missed times, and I know for sure there was on that 17 seconds left in the game. Miles Battle admits it. He let a guy behind him, and it burned him. But then he makes the play at the end to stop it. That's kind of where I'm looking at. I don't doubt the safeties. Sione Vaki and Cole Bishop, those two dudes are incredible. Teo Johnson is a nickel.
They've been terrific.
It's honestly, like, those two could be one of the best safety tandem that Utah's had in a very long time. I'm curious to see how that progresses, but I want to see how that all works together. I don't know that we're going to necessarily learn a ton against Weber State, but I think it's good to be able to come out there crisp and be able to be ready to go. And if you don't do that, then maybe there can still be some lingering stuff. But also, I don't take a lot of, you know, weight into some of these FCS games.
Yeah. The only thing I'll add to that is, you know, you're looking at the cornerback situation and, you know, and how they're playing. Zamaya Vaughn got picked on a few times against Florida.
Yeah.
And Zamaya Vaughn let up a couple of passes against Baylor. Thought he's been, you know, hasn't played poorly, but there's definitely been stretches where he's getting picked on. That's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's anything major right now, and you still have tape against Power 5 teams, which is phenomenal. An SEC team, a Big 12 team, I mean, those are going to go a long way to be able to help you move forward. So I don't think it's the end of the world. You know, it's going to be okay. But let's transition a little bit to the Weber State game. Weber State obviously loses Jay Hill. Jay Hill took the defensive coordinator position up at BYU. They changed it to Mickey Mental. He's the head coach now there. I love the name, honestly. Like, I think it's a great name. So
tremendous.
Weber State's already won. It's my alma mater, so, you know, I've got a little bit more bias. No, I'm just kidding. this is a good team, right? Like, they're an FCS team that has a lot of talented guys that are going to compete for an FCS championship. You know, we've seen Utah play Weber State over the years, even under Jay Hill when they've been a good team. Weber can make some noise and they can do some things, but I don't think this is going to be anything that Utah should fear, barring that offense not clicking. But there was kind of some interesting comments that Kyle made about the future of FCS games and kind of how he predicts. What did you learn from what Kyle said about FCS games in the future?
Yeah, and if you're listening to this, I've got something coming on this topic on Thursday. I asked Kyle Whittingham, you know, with conference realignment being what it is and scheduling is getting harder, do you believe that FBS versus FCS games will stay on the schedule moving forward? Now, I say that with currently Utah's got two games against Weber State on the schedule, and they've got two games closer to the end of the decade. With is Utah Tech still FCS? No.
Yeah, they're still FCS. Or no.
They're still FCS.
Yeah, they're FCS. Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
they're
yeah,
the
yeah.
WAC?
Yeah.
They're FCS. Okay, so two against Weber State, two against Utah Tech. For the people that don't know, right, these, you know, these one-off games where the FCS team visits the FBS team, Utah will pay Weber State $550,000, $600,000. They'll pay Utah Tech something similar. These, you know, these types of games, you know, $900,000, $1.2 million, all kinds of huge numbers. So Kyle Whittingham's belief is that these games will go away. And he kind of went back to one of his old favorites. Kyle believes that at some point, you're going to end up with only a couple of super conferences, right? You're going to take the Power Five and split them up into two or three super conferences. And his belief is that the super conferences will strictly play each other. And that's it. And that is to the detriment of the FCS teams, because if these $600,000, $800,000 paydays go away, that is going to be really tough on the budgets and the athletic departments that count on those bye games to help make their athletic departments whole financially. So that is Kyle's belief, that it'll be super conferences playing each other, and the group of five, so to speak, and the FCS teams, they'll do their own thing, that, you know, they'll play each other. You know, Utah, you know, not every year, but they do, you know, pretty regularly play FCS teams, whether it be Weber, Dixie State / Utah Tech, you know, is new to the schedule as of a couple of years ago. But, you know, I think it's been good for the state that Utah and BYU play these types of teams. And I think that if these types of games go away, yes, it'll be to the detriment of the FCS programs, but that would be a real shame, because personally, I think it's fun when the in-state teams play each other.
You know, look, I don't consider myself the brightest person, but I have a wonderful idea that I think can solve this problem in the future if it does go the way Kyle Whittingham foresees
it. I can't wait.
You ready for this? You take these FCS games and you turn it into the spring game, allow them to still get a pay game, but allows you to be able to get a better view and a better scrimmage. It doesn't matter if the FCS team wins, because it's there as a scrimmage. It allows you to be able to go up against better competition. And I know, you know, they want to hold some of these guys out, especially at Utah, where they want to go with depth players. Even then, use the depth players, right? Put Brandon Rose in that game and let him go up against Weber State. If Weber State beats them, so what? That's adversity. That allows them to teach them moments, right? Like, go up against, back when James Madison was in the FCS, that's a great team. Give them some reps that allow them to be able to understand what game-like situations are. They still get their paycheck in spring. Everything's okay. The super conferences can play each other. Bada bing, bada boom. I just made $1 million.
Oh, bada bing, bada boom. Okay. I love it.
Look, NCAA, I'm ready for consulting fees. So, you know, here we go.
I do like that idea. You know, the concept of spring football, spring games. You know, we heard some of that during COVID, that maybe the FCS teams start playing in the spring. I can paraphrase what Kyle Whittingham would think about your idea. Kyle would essentially say, why would I put my team on film against another opponent in April? So it's out there. Why would
sure,
I do that?
Sure. Coaches are paranoid, man. I'm with you. That's what coaches he's going to say. Yeah. He's going to say that, but yeah. I don't know. It's funny to me, because it's like, unless the NCAA or the conference in general like speaks to that, like, these coaches are so paranoid about putting film on tape. The reality is you're playing depth players, right? Like, even in the spring game, those are so watered down with what you're doing. Like, still water it down. I don't even care if the FCS team beats them 42-10, right? Like, what does it matter? Like, you know, and I understand that other side of the coin where it's like, oh, they just got beat by an FCS team. Like, I think we have to get out of that mindset. And I think if you can train people to get there, it has the potential, if they want to keep this, right? If they want to preserve it and do it, by all means, that's how it is. I do think it probably goes to the super conferences, and you probably just play each other, beat each other up like the NFL. But look, I mean, there's avenues here, right? And the reality is the whole NCAA model, the whole amateurism side of things, that's going away. This is becoming a quasi feeder league to the NFL anyway. So it's tough. You know, it depends on what kind of money goes into this that I think will be ultimately the detriment or growth of this sport. And, you know, I hope it continues to grow and keep some of the traditions. I didn't go to a college where there was a lot of tradition related to football or basketball or any of that kind of stuff. So I missed that side of it, but I know a ton of people that just like going to the University of Utah, for example, is their life, right? They are a Utah fan. They're a BYU fan. They're a Utah State fan.
Yeah.
Those things mean something to people. And so I think you take that out of the game, that really changes it. And I hope that we don't get that point. But it is getting there. Fox and ESPN are controlling things. So,
as a former beat writer for a mid-major program that played FCS football once upon a time, I am empathetic to those athletic departments mm-hmm. and their shortcomings and those budgets. They really do count on those FBS games to really, you know, bring in money and, you know, and balance the budget. And it would be really, really hard for a lot of FCS programs to function without those games. And look, not every FCS program plays FBS teams. The ones that are like fully scholarshiped, like not all mm-hmm. FCS teams offer the max of 65 scholarships. Weber State does. And those games are like vitally important for Weber's bottom line. So I am empathetic to that struggle, and I genuinely hope it doesn't go away.
I agree. I think they're fun. I mean, ultimately, I would much rather see Utah play Power 5 teams because they're more fun, but I think these are sure. also good games as well. So I ask this question every single week when we have an opponent, we being the loose term because we don't play, but I just used it that way, so here we go. how does Utah lose this game?
I don't think they do. And I hate that answer because it's like a cop out. Like I knew that this question was coming, and like I really thought about it. And it's hard to envision this happening because the talent gap and the size gap and the physicality gap is so much that it feels impossible to envision Utah losing this game. Now, for the sake of this exercise, two things: if your special teams are a mess, which they have not been here through, you know, through two games with Cole Becker as the field goal kicker and Jack Baumeister as the punter, both have been excellent. But if you have special teams troubles, that's one thing. And if you're not taking care of the ball, which we've seen not this year, but in the 1 or 2 years past, yeah, there's been games where Utah just didn't take care of the ball. So it's really, really hard to envision Utah losing this game, but if you're going to spring an upset like this, that's what has to happen. Special teams to be a mess, maybe block a kick, miss field goal, and force 2, 3, 4 turnovers from Utah. If you're going to spring an upset, crazy things have to happen.
Yeah, I agree. And Weber State did this to Utah State last year, right? So, I mean, and the level of Utah State to Utah is drastically different. I don't want to sit here and say, oh, it can happen, because at the end of the day, I don't think it really will, right? Like, Utah will win this game. I agree with you that it has to be turnovers. It has to be an offense that just is completely inept. They can't get anything going. You know, Nate Johnson or Cam Rising throws too many picks, whatever it may be. Utah would have to completely fall apart. And even then, I still think they could put their 2 or 3 deep in there and still probably win this game. Granted, Utah's already at its 2 deep pretty well with some of these positions, so that's funny to say. You know, Utah's a deep team. I think if we joked about this at media availability earlier this week, and Josh, you weren't there when we joked about it, but the SUU coach that talked about how much better Utah was than BYU, and look, this, we're not going to get into that. I don't want to, but it is funny. Utah has built itself up into a really deep program, and so I think this is a team that does well against Weber State. This is a get-right game, not for the same purposes of losing games before this. It's a get-right game to make sure you're ready for UCLA. You know, they're going to be looking ahead to UCLA. Like, let's be real, but I think it's how they approach this game, how they look at it, how they're ready to go. If Cam's ready to go, how does he look? Can he shake off the rust? How does Nate look, right? I mean, there's a real possibility that Nate can go against UCLA if Cam's still not ready. So, I think this is a fun environment. This is a great opportunity. It's a day game. You can get it done with and then go watch another football game later that night, go out, hang out with family. This is fun time. So, look, I don't think Utah loses this. Crazier things have happened, but it can still happen. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything else we got to talk about, or are we good to go?
No, I think we covered it. Look, no matter what you think of Utah or the way they've played or like shortcomings of the offense, Bryson Barnes, the whole thing, the point is they're 2-0 and they've got 2 wins over Power 5 teams And they, you know, the Florida game was not in doubt. The Baylor game was in doubt. And I think wins like that can really propel you forward because, you know, you saw a lot of adversity with a lot of injuries and you figured it out anyway. And the bottom line is you're 2-0. And as we've said on this podcast for the last week or two, if you're 3-0 going into UCLA, everything is on the table and anything is possible moving forward if you start this season 3-0.
Well, especially if you have Cam Rising come in and he just picks up and Utah is a load on offense. I mean, that can be some really dangerous stuff for Pac-12 teams that, you know, have gotten a lot more prominence this year, and the fact that they've got a deep Pac-12, you know, 2/3 of the conference is ranked in the AP Top 25. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of good things happening. This is a good opportunity for Utah if they can continue to maintain it. So, it'll be fun. It'll be an awesome opportunity. So, thanks again for listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. We appreciate any conversations you have with us, whether that be on Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter. Our screen names are at JFurKSL or at Joshua_Newman. Or you can just, you know, email us, do whatever you need to, hit us up however you need. But we appreciate you listening. We are around. We're a little too around sometimes, so.
Yeah,
touche. we'll check out tonight, and then we'll hit up another podcast next week as we get into conference play. So thanks for listening, guys.